Welcome to She Struts Radio. I played that, as you probably have heard. Prince is gone to the other side. And just in honor of that brother, I wanted to play Purple Rain. At least I played a portion of it, because it's about 9 minutes long. And so at 57 years old, he has gone on to another adventure. I'm your host, Deborah M. Ricks, and I am grateful for my life. And I thank you for listening to She Struts Radio this evening. I have a lovely woman. I met her, I would say, probably about 3 years ago. I was working for WEAA, and I learned of her story some sort of way, and I cannot tell you how, but as a producer, I was the executive producer for the Anthony McCarthy Show, and as a producer, you're always looking for great stories. And somehow I ran across this young woman's story. It may have been Essence Magazine, but I think it was. I'm not sure, though. But we will, that may get cleared up, but it's not important. What's important is that I invited her to come on that show. She did. She came to the studio, and her husband came to the studio, and it was just lovely to meet her. And we've stayed connected off and on since that time. And so I would love for you to get prepared this time for your questions, because I think you're going to learn some things. I love sharing people's stories, because all of our stories have meaning for other people. Our challenges, our triumphs, our trials and tribulations. And so let me just tell you a little bit about her. And I'm not going to go into her entire bio. I can't do that, but I'm going to leave most of it up to her to share with you because I love to hear the person share their own story rather than me read, the things that they experienced. I will just read a tad of it. So, when I posted on Facebook, I talked a bit about identity and what makes you you. What happens if you lose that thing, quote unquote, that makes you feel confident and strong and beautiful and worthy of being seen, heard, and loved? And what do you do now? And this show is about more than identity, actually. It's really it's a love story as well. A love story about self-love and love for someone else. So you will hear more. I love love stories, even though I don't have enough of those on my show, but I do love to hear when people meet and fall in love and commit to each other. So prior to April 2005, 32-year-old Pernita Farah was enjoying a very normal and active life when her diagnosis of lupus interrupted everything. And despite being a teenage mom, she graduated college, had a successful career, got engaged to her college sweetheart, and she loved traveling. And then suddenly lupus flared up and quickly sent her and her life spiraling downward. And so welcome to She Struts Radio, Pernita Farah.
Thank you. It's an honor to be here. Thanks for inviting me.
It's my honor to have you. And there's more I could read, but I won't, because I want you, in your words, to share some things. So tell us a little bit about your life prior to that diagnosis.
Just as you started to read, it was normal for, in the time that I was in, doing what 30-year-olds do, although I was a little bit of behind the schedule for my peers because I was a teenage mom, but I did, attempt to catch up. So I graduated college in my late 20s. I had been working on the corporate side for a while, and I was, progressing very well in that area. I had been in a long-term relationship and was engaged. I'd been in that relationship for almost 8 or 9 years at that point. And so life was great. My son was, at that time, he was just entering high school, what normal 30-year-olds do, not necessarily worrying about my diagnosis of lupus, which came when I was about 26. But, the symptoms were, they would come and I would get, short-term treatment, steroids or something, and then they would go. So I adopted it as a way of life without knowing how the depth of what could happen. So that's pretty much what was happening prior to that flare-up.
So when you were diagnosed at age 26, you were having symptoms and flare-ups, but you just went on with your life, right? And you dealt with it. So what were those?
For the original diagnosis or?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Well, I was always so tired. And being in my 20s, I mean, I was working probably 2 jobs. And, I was a mother and running a household. So sometimes I would just brush it off as like, oh, I'm just so exhausted. But I was exhausted beyond the level of normalcy for someone in their 20s. I mean, some days I just couldn't get out of bed. I would be so achy whenever it rained. I had symptoms like a 80-year-old, I remember, older people would say, oh, it's going to rain, my arthritis is acting up, I would have swollen joints. And I would go to the doctor, I had HMO, I would go to the doctor, and, you know, a lot of times they send me home with Tylenol or, you know, something, and after a couple of days or a week, I would insist on going back, like, this can't be just a, you know, some type of cold or flu or, you know, and eventually they took more and more tests and then sent me to a specialist who took more and more tests and followed me over a couple of weeks to months with these tests. And then finally one day I was home cooking dinner and I got a call from a rheumatologist from the HMO. And he said, Ms. Ferrar, this is an identified himself. And he said, you know, we've gotten all the results from all of your tests and I'm sorry to tell you, you have a positive diagnosis of lupus. And at the time, it was devastating. Lupus is not one of those diseases that is easily identified when you hear it. When you think of cancer, oh, we know what that is. When you hear of multiple sclerosis even, you know, we have a general sense of what that is. But lupus is, you know, it's actually been labeled as the mystery disease because that's kind of what it really is. Nobody really has an exact definition on why people have lupus. You know, in the medical field, there's some research that says it has genetic connections, you know, some environmental connections, and most of it is just unknown. But for me personally, I happen to have had a personal experience with a person with lupus. My son's grandmother, whom I lived with briefly in my teenage years, she had lupus. And I watched her for about 2 or 3 years, I mean, just kind of go downhill. She would be in bed for days and weeks. She would spend the summers in the hospital. She would call off, you know, not be able to go to work for days and weeks and months at a time. And, you know, I just remember on her dresser there was always these medicine bottles. And, you know, I'm only very young, so I didn't really understand it. But when the doctor said those words, I flashed back to my experience living with her and witnessing her suffer. And I just, you know, I just almost froze in time. And so it was devastating to receive the news. But like you said, I did attempt to go on with my life, follow what the doctor said, in hopes that, you know, I wouldn't have the same extreme results that I witnessed with my son's grandmother.
So you answered the question I was about to ask. How did you even know to be devastated? I mean, a lot of people don't understand what lupus is, and I'm one of those people, even though I know a couple of people, at least one person, who has been dealing with this disease, and and she posts to Facebook sometimes, and I know that it does make you very fatigued, but I wouldn't know much, you know, I just haven't known, I don't know much more about that disease. And so I can understand why people call it the mystery disease. So when you finally, though, so you're 26, you get diagnosed, you flash back to your grandmother, and you know it's not something that, it's not pretty. It's not, you know, it can devastate your life, but you still go on. At what point do you start to, things start to spiral downward, and you know, 'cause you're going on, you're living your life still, even though you're struggling because you're fatigued, and like you said, you're a young woman, but you're dealing with it. So was there a pivotal moment when things just went, really got bad?
Yeah, absolutely. I was at work one day, and all of a sudden I just started having these extreme abdominal pains, and I just literally got up from my desk, locked my office, and went straight to the hospital. And I got there, and they told me that I was going to need to have surgery that day, an emergency surgery. There was something going on with my intestines. So I had the surgery, and, you know, to this day, we never found out exactly what was happening. And then after the surgery, my immune system. And back to your question, people don't know what lupus is. Even though I had that experience, I still didn't know biologically or medically what the disease does. I just saw what the, you know, the symptoms might be, or the, you know, the reaction. But what lupus is, it's an autoimmune disorder where, you know, everybody in their body, we all have a immune system. It is the thing that acts like a thermostat that keeps all of our organs and all of our body systems functioning, monitoring that they're functioning properly. So if something is going wrong, if the body detects some something that's not supposed to be there, some foreign substance, your immune system, also known as your white blood cells, will come in to try and protect you from those things. So it will actually build a shield of white blood cells around anything that is foreign. Most of the time we don't know this is happening. You know, we eat food and, you know, some small things, our body might not get a chance to react because our immune system has already gone in and swooped in with the white blood cells and has covered and protected our organs and our tissues to fight for us. They work in, you know, behind the scenes. But when you have lupus, your white blood cells are confused. They go in even when there's something that's not foreign. It may think that a healthy cell that you need for your heart to function or your liver to function, it might confuse it for a foreign thing and start attacking it. So your body is actually attacking itself. So that's what lupus is, and that's what lupus does by definition. So it can actually take on, and the reason that it's so mysterious is because of that reason, it can mimic all kinds of other diseases. So if you go to the hospital and they see something going on with your heart or your lungs or your, most of the time, kidneys are a big one with lupus. The doctors may automatically think that you have a heart condition, a liver condition, and that's the end of it. But then when a month later or 2 months later, then the next body system or organ system is going, then all of a sudden there's been something, you know, something else is going on. So a lot of times lupus is not detected until things have gotten, you know, pretty bad already. And so that's what it is. The body is attacking itself. It has no way of knowing when to attack and when things are fine just the way they are. So, you know, it's kind of a frenemy. It's kind of a frenemy. So that's what happened. And for me, yeah, after I had that surgery, my immune system, you know, I never had surgery, never had any major medical problems. So my body, my immune system, all of a sudden is confused. It doesn't know what's going on, how to react to this sudden change in dynamics going on within my body. And so all of a sudden, my immune system jumps in and it's just basically going, you know, going crazy. And all of a sudden, I start going into multiple organ failure. Inflammation was just taking over my body. And so I started getting really sick. I lost like 40 pounds in a couple of days. All of my hair fell out. I couldn't hold down any food. I became incontinent. This all happened in a matter of 4 months. My body could not respond to that surgery. It got so confused and out of whack. My immune system just turned on and wouldn't turn off. So it was attacking me from the inside out. And so that's what happened. And the culmination of that ended on, well, I can't say ended, but was on April 5th when my family took me into the emergency room after finding me non-responsive. And that's when the worst of it was revealed.
You went through a great deal. I mean, and sounds like something that could take somebody out emotionally, if not physically, because so much going on so rapidly. What state of mind were you in?
I was, because I had been going to the doctor for those few months when things were just going downhill, and I kept getting, we don't know what to do. Eventually it was, you know, I would get IV steroids. I would get, you know, the best medicine they said they had. And then eventually the medicines weren't working, so they would send me to, you know, first thing, gave me a cane, then a walker, and then the doctor said, I don't know what to tell you. I think you should, you know, go home and get on disability because I don't know how, you know, we don't know. And that's what I did. I went home and I literally couldn't walk. I would try and get up and my legs were like wet noodles. I was hopeless. I mean, you think of doctors as, you know, next to God, because that's how society kind of upholds them. And so if the doctor is saying, you know, they are at their wit's end, what am I going to say or do? What's the next step, except for to, you know, pray that kind of the state I was in. It was pretty hopeless.
You had a relationship at that time, and you have, of course, family. What impact did this have on your relationships? I mean, you know, when you and I have talked in the past, one of the things, we talked about many things, and I want to cover some of those things. And I know that the man that you're married to today is not the man that you were engaged to at that time, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Right. So, and then we talked about, you know, later on, as you got to a place where you are in the wheelchair. And so let's talk a little bit about the impact, the emotional state or, you know, mindset that you were in, and just move through that, because lupus clearly, I mean, you described it so well. I never understood quite what it did to the body. And when you said that, you know, because the body, as I was reading just earlier, and it was unrelated to me doing some research on lupus, but I was reading something, and they were talking about how intelligent the body is. And we know today that the body has like a mind of its own. And when, obviously, in your case, the mind almost, if you will, kind of went whack, just kind of mind of its own, but it wasn't doing what was good for your body. So
right.
We do know the body is intelligent, and so just the fact that what you described about the white blood cells, and that is the immune system, I never knew that. And then the fact that they come like I almost see them like soldiers coming to protect the body,
exactly.
Right, you know, and when something foreign is there, and something that looks like it could hurt the body, that's nothing but intelligence. But where I like to talk about, you know, fast forward to a place where now because you had 17 surgeries and you were in the hospital for 884 days. That's approaching 3 years.
Yeah, it's going on 3 years. So after being admitted to the hospital, and this is where my memory, I rely on the backstory a little bit from my family and friends and my medical records, because it's almost like, you know, someone pulled the curtain. I mean, things just went black. So I don't remember going to the hospital. I was, you know, non-responsive. My first memory from that point on is waking up in the hospital. And, you know, all these people are standing over me, and, you know, everybody's in these white suits. I'm in this glass encased room. I have a bleeding tube. And I never got the information that I was paralyzed. Nobody ever told me that, not in the beginning. And so that's kind of, you know, I'm looking around like, what's going on here? Come to find out I had been in a coma. For a minute, and I, you know, the doctors had told my family to prepare themselves because that it was very likely that I would not have come out of that, to, you know, prepare themselves for the worst. And so I was, at this point, all of my organ systems had suffered some damage. There was kidney damage, everything. And so the inflammation had also reached my spinal cord. And that is where the paralysis came in. So it's no different than the inflammation that was on my kidneys, the inflammation that was on my colon, the inflammation that was everywhere. It's just the problem is the spinal cord is so sensitive that any damage to the spinal cord can be very traumatic. And so that same inflammation that was elsewhere in the body had also reached the nervous column, which is the spinal cord, and that's where the nerve, you know. And so I was told that I would not be able to walk again, that I had so much internal damage that I was not able to be outside of 24/7 medical care. It was, you know, let's see if she makes it through the night and then the next night. And eventually, like you said, it was going on 3 years. But in that time, I did shuffle from hospital to hospital. I went from a couple of hospitals, and then they would send me to a nursing home after they figured there was nothing else that they could do. It was too expensive. By then, the insurance had ran out, you know, and I was kind of a ward of the state. I had no insurance, you know, nowhere to go. And so most of that time, I did spend in nursing homes.
And what was going on in your relationships? And the reason why I want to go there is because you're at a beautiful place in terms of you've come to a place of acceptance and some other things that I loved to hear about because, you know, we've talked more than once,
mm-hmm.
you and I,
yeah.
and you've gained some insights and you've had to learn how to identify as find other ways to identify yourself or to we talked about identity at
mm-hmm.
the opening of the show. That's what I talked about because
right.
I want to talk about the emotional.
Right. Well, I mean.
Everything
Yeah, I mean, it really was rock bottom and not necessarily, I mean, the physical pain was one thing, but you're right, the emotional and psychological trauma of all of a sudden, the life that I had when I went into that hospital no longer existed. The woman that I was when I went into that hospital, she died. So everything about who I had been for 32 years was like a figment of my imagination. So I'm left with, you know, what do I do with, you know, this new body? What do I do with my emotional connections, you know, to people? Because now I'm feeling like, you know, I'm less than a whole person. I have no value to the people who are around me. You know, it was a strain on my family. I felt guilty for having them to have to, you know, come and sit watch over me in the hospital for my fiance at the time. It's a little tricky there because we had, you know, right around the time when I first started getting sick, we kind of was, you know, struggling a little bit, the seven-year itch and all that was happening. And so, you know, it was kind of like I felt like we were already having some issues, and definitely this was going to be the nail in the coffin. Like, you know, nobody who didn't have was not going to sign up for, you know, taking care of somebody in the wheelchair who can do nothing for themselves. So I just felt, you know, even though the doctor, you know, said by now I'm out of the woods, I'm out of the critical stage, you may not make it through the night. But to be honest, I didn't necessarily want to live. I just thought, you know, what was I going to live for? What was I moving toward? I mean, my body's all mangled up, you know, these surgeries, the bed sores, the wheelchair, the bald head, the diapers. I mean, what was I going to do with this? You know, so when you talk about identity, especially at that age, I mean, you know, and as a woman, you know, we kind of have been, I don't want to say race, but society has kind of molded us that, you know, our power is in our beauty. And that comes with not only your physical beauty and your face. I mean, we know men are visual creatures, so, you know, that's why, you know, everybody's so big on, you know, beautifying themselves. But, you know, in general, our beauty is where our power lies. And so, you know, even though my life had, you know, had already had a few challenges, but I did know at the end of the day, no matter, you know, where my life took some types of turn, still could use my powers, let's say, my feminine powers to kind of, you know, move and shake around what I, you know, wanted to do in life. And so, you know, that's kind of what we have as women. We have the power of influence. I mean, that's a God-given thing. We have the power of influence. And so now I'm thinking, what am I going to do? Who am I going to be? What do I have to offer? Who would want to sign up for it? Who would want to deal with this? I never, all those years, I'd never seen myself in a mirror. But I knew that I looked awful when, you know, people would come visit me, and just the look on their faces and, you know, the look of sadness, the look of despair they had, and I, you know, it just transferred. I just knew, you know, everybody's feeling sorry for me. It's just this tragic situation. And so that played a lot on my self-esteem. It made me feel like I had nothing to you know, I had nothing left. I didn't want to just be in a wheelchair and just exist. It was a very hard adjustment, and it didn't happen overnight, that's for sure. But yes, eventually I did get there, but I struggled for a long time just trying to figure out what do I do now with this.
I got to tell you, when you were on WEAA, we didn't go as deep, but I do know there were moments when I remember your husband looking over at you, and we, you know, we're in the studio so we could look at each other, and I just had such respect for you then, but now I it's just deepened because you didn't have to go on, you know, but you did. And for you to have dealt with so much, there's a reason why you're still here to share your story. And I just applaud you. You are definitely, I'm just getting emotional here listening to what you went through, and not just physical, but everything that went with that. And I'll never know all of it, but what I'm hearing is that you are amazing. You are amazing. And I just applaud you. So you're struggling. Yeah, you deserve that and more. And because when I see your picture of you in your wedding dress, you are absolutely gorgeous. And nobody but for that chair, they just look at you like they say nobody would know what you've been through from the way you look.
Well, you know, one, I have to give God the credit because, you know, when I couldn't for myself, I eventually got to the place of being so low and so lonely that it was just me and God, you know. And so eventually I just turned to him because, I mean, I even, you know, I was suicidal for a long time. I was suicidal. I mean, if I had the freedom and, you know, to take matters in my own hands, I mean, I absolutely considered it because it was just that hopeless. But, you know, over time God revealed to me that, you know, the reason that I did make it through that night and the next year was so that I would have this testimony And to be honest, you know, sometimes even now, it's been 11 years now, 2016. So actually April, I just had my 11-year anniversary. And sometimes I look back and I'm thinking, even, you know, with today, with, you know, the death of Prince and so many others. I mean, since then, I've lost friends. And I just think, you know, well, God, why did you save me? I mean, I've had people die over, you know, just small things. And I'm thinking, you know, all that I went through, every opportunity for, you know, every for my life to have ended, but yet I am still here, and I have to give, you know, all that credit to God because, I mean, you know, even today, you know, some of my doctors, when I first met them after all this happened, they would come in and say, I literally took your medical record home because I've never seen anything like it. And then I walk in a room and I'm expecting to see, you know, somebody that's, you know, just kind of completely damaged. And I show up and here you are. And they would go get the other nurses and the other doctors and say, everything you learned in medical school, this is, you know, this is the face right here. This, you know, this girl has been through it all. That's happened to me. And, you know, so it's, I'm constantly reminded and, you know, warned not to take too much credit because it is, you know, it is, I have, this is a testimony, and by no other way would I have survived this, even from the emotional side. And, you know, I talked about being lonely. You know, in the end, I mean, the nursing home is not for 30-year-olds. I mean, you know, it was very depressive to see people come in, and then a week later you see them wheeling them out, you know. and so, you know, eventually it was kind of like death came a normal part of my day. You know, it no longer had any type of impact on me. And so that's, you know, the will to live and move on was not something that I just woke up one morning. It just came from, you know, me being in solitude. And someone said to me before when I said, man, you know, it's the loneliest time of my life. I've never been this down. And they suggested that, you know, don't focus on, you know, other people because God designed it that way so he could have you all to himself because he knew he would be able to use you, you know, to share your testimony. And that's exactly why I believe, know, that I'm here.
Amen to that.
Mm-hmm.
So I take it your fiance, he booked.
Well, I mean, I was so down that, I mean, he showed up. He was there the whole time, even after I moved. But I just was in a place, I would beg him to leave, see me this way. I mean, because in my mind, I'm thinking of what our relationship or any relationship is man and woman, and I'm thinking I can't play my role. I'm injured. I'm on the sidelines, and you know this is in this society, this is a 30-something-year-old you know black man who I'm sure when he leaves this nursing home, you know even on the way home he has to pass 20 walking women. So in my mind I'm thinking if I just cut my ties, it won't hurt so bad. If I just you know, just say, stay away, you know, this. You don't feel guilty, this didn't happen to you, it happened to me, you have my permission, you know, please leave, I can't take the emotional torture. And that's pretty much how that went, and eventually, you know, he would cut that out, but 884 days is a long time. And so eventually, you know, I mean, I was not capable of being anything to anybody. I couldn't even be myself. So it just was a gradual, and I would say even mutual, although with mutual coming out of my mouth, but my heart was kicking and screaming. But I didn't have anything to bring. And rather than have someone break my heart if I, you know, succumb to my feelings, I didn't have the luxury of being who I was inside because the outside was a complete, you know, different story. So I can't be somebody's girlfriend or wife or love interest when I'm, you know, all broken up and, you know, laying in the bed for 2 years. Like, what did I have to offer? So that's kind of how that, you know, how that went in. You know, it hurt, but I had, I don't want to say bigger issues going on, but, you know, it was just kind of like more, you know, more to that was already, I mean, it already was rock bottom, so it was one more rock, you know.
Yeah, you pushed him away to protect yourself.
Yeah,
that's what
absolutely.
I'm hearing.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what's interesting about that is I think about the various relationships I've seen where a person has changed so dramatically. There's a picture circulating on Facebook where the woman, she was pretty attractive. Looked like, I don't know if she looked like a model, but she certainly was attractive. And she experienced a fire and it just devastated her entire body and face.
Mm-hmm.
And the man that she was with, I think they were engaged at the time, but they got married, still together, stayed together. And I've seen many stories like that. And I'm sure I'm not alone when I look and say, wow, what an incredible person that is to stay with that person, because we know that it is, we know how society especially looks at women as, as accessories in a sense, in terms of how good we look and fertile, as some people say, and healthy and all of that. So I understand. I can understand you trying to protect yourself. So let's fast forward then.
Okay.
Let's fast forward to, because your faith, you found solace in God, and you were able to come this far, as they say, by faith. So.
Mm-hmm.
I saw pictures, and it might have been a video of, it might have just been so well described in the article in Essence Magazine, but how you walked down, you know, the aisle to get married to your husband, Troy. So let's talk about, though, how you all met, and because you're not where you were with clearly feel worthy enough to have Troy, and he seems like a great guy.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and this kind of goes back a little bit to my nursing home days. One of my best friends who would come and visit me, her husband had a cousin who was also in a wheelchair. And, you know, when people would come, it was always, I don't know what to say. I mean, I was the first. There was, in five generations, there's nobody else in a wheelchair in my family. So, you know, nobody in my social life, or I am always the only one. And so it was, you know, people were struggling with what to say, because usually, you know, when somebody's at their worst, you know, you give them a pep talk. Oh, it'll be okay. You know, I got your back, or, you know, something. But at this, nobody had any any words of, you know, comfort or anything they could offer me. So my best friend, who was married right out of high school to her husband, his cousin, who was Troy, was also in a wheelchair and had been for, you know, over 20-something years. And I met Troy because at their wedding in 26 years ago, we both went down the aisle as groomsmen and bridesmaids. But, you know, we didn't know each other. I just knew him as my best friend's husband's cousin, Troy. And it only stood out because he was the only one in his family in the wheelchair, and because I've been around her for 30 years, you know, I just knew him by association. And so when they would come visit me, they would say, you remember my cousin Troy? You know, he's in a wheelchair. Maybe we bring him up here. He can, you know, help you, you know, with the transition. He can, you know, maybe share some insights about, you know, wheelchair life. And I was just so And I didn't want to see anybody. I didn't want to do, you know, I didn't want to. And, you know, Troy was, you know, at the time, you know, Troy was normal. And so, you know, if that makes sense. Troy was in a wheelchair, but he was normal. Troy, you know, he worked, he drove a car, he got around, he was the best dressed man, you know, everywhere he went. So I was just thinking, yeah, he's in a wheelchair, but he still can't relate to me because I'm on the worst end of the wheelchair spectrum, as if there was one. You know, I just couldn't picture myself having anything in common with Troy, although he was in a wheelchair. You know, and at this time, I'm still on my back. I hadn't even, you know, been in a wheelchair. I'm still in the hospital bed. So I never even started learning to use a wheelchair. I was still on my back. And so I would insist, like, no, 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 don't you dare bring him up here. And so, you know, years went by, a couple years went by. I finally got out of the nursing home, and I'm, you know, visiting with my best friend and her husband. And I say, you know, I know you're out of the hospital, but I still think you should meet Troy. Because, you know, he could, you know, he knows about this life. And so I'm just like, okay. So she connected with us through Facebook. And so we just started chatting on Facebook. And then it was like, well, hey, I'm tired of typing. What's your phone number? And we would stay on the phone for like 8-9 hours.
Wow.
We never talked about the wheelchair. I think the thing was, because he was in a wheelchair, I didn't feel so insecure. I felt like, well, he can't judge me. He can't say I'm less than a woman because look at him. So I was more open to talking to him, and he became a friend because I made myself available. Because, you know, I would get, you know, once I had left the nursing home and I was living on my own, I would get some attention when I would go to the grocery store or, you know, just out on the bus. And I would look at these guys who would even just give me a simple compliment. Hey, you know, you're beautiful. And I would be like, you pervert. You know, what do you want? Why are you looking at me? Don't you see I'm in a wheelchair? So that was my, you know, my disposition. And so Troy came as somebody with no, you know, motive, and I didn't worry about him judging me or me not being, you know, a whole woman enough, you know, for a whole man. And so, you know, we became friends, and the wheelchair just disappeared, you know, for both of us. And that's kind of how we got close. We got close. So, yeah.
Oh, that's so wonderful. And I don't know what to make of that. I mean, because like you said, it's like, okay, well, he's in a wheelchair, I'm in a wheelchair, and now we don't need to talk about it.
We talk about life, everything else.
And 8 or 9, that's a lot of, that's a full-time job, talking 8 or 9 hours.
Yeah, it was. It was funny. I was in my last semester of graduate school, and I had like straight A's. That last semester, I flunked. I flunked my last semester. I got a big walking D after getting straight A's in my master's program because I just gotten so enthralled. I hadn't had any, you know, any social. I hadn't had any relationships since I left the nursing home. So, you know, just having somebody to talk to, there was so much to tell and so much to share. And, you know, just having somebody to let all those years of, you know, experience out. And so, you know, it was a full-time thing. So I spent my life because I was able to get it, you know, to get it waived, and I graduated on time. But It was devastating at the time when those grades came. I knew it because I wasn't doing my work. But at the time, I was like, hey, I have to give this some attention because this feels so good.
Yes, I can understand. Cause I'm not in a wheelchair, and when it happens for me, I don't know about flunk anything, but it's a good feeling to meet someone and to enjoy each other, you know?
I've been so long of being isolated. It was like coming out of, you know, solitary confinement in the world was, you know. So that's kind of how that.
And I did learn this about Troy. He likes to shop, and you like to shop. I know y'all have that in common.
Yeah, that was all we did.
Yeah, I saw pictures of you all and all these bags are surrounding you guys.
The first time we met in person, first, second, and third time, we met at the mall and we shopped, and I was like, wow, as much as, you know, finding somebody, a man who likes to be in the stores as much as I do, that was like a win-win.
You got one out of a million. I mean, because that's a rarity for a woman to be able to shop with her man, because they do not like to do that.
So you
found a rare one right there. So I want to open up the lines in a minute, but I want to, I'm going to play, I have a musical interlude. And but before we go to that, I want people to know that Pranita Farah is working on a book, and at the moment she has a working title, but it's likely to change.
Mm-hmm.
But she has a blog, and it's called Pretty and Paralyzed. And I just want to throw this out to you, my listeners, because Pranita was not so jazzed about me using the title Pretty, because she's like, oh, well, you know, I want people to think I'm very vain or arrogant. And I said, but you are pretty. It's just the truth. We're not making anything up. And so she has a blog called Pretty and Paralyzed. And can you tell people how to connect with you, your blog, and if you know, if you have any idea when your book is coming out, just so people can keep their eyes peeled so they can support you, because this is going to be a book of, to me, that I can see that will inspire people. As you can hear, Pranita has a lot of insight, and she's gone through a lot, and here she is. Here she is. So,
well, Pretty and Paralyzed, you know, was actually created, because I like to share my story, and I was, you know, blessed with a platform that I didn't have to create to be able to go out and share my story. So I wanted to, you know, have a way to continue to share it. But the name, the title, came, you know, kind of adapted from the dichotomy of, you know, what society says is beautiful. And, you know, for us to discover the beauty that we each have within. Deborah, you said on your Facebook abstract for this show, you said we all have that one thing that we find, you know, beautiful. And earlier I had mentioned, you know, as a woman, you know, having a nice body, a pretty face, or, you know, anything, that is powerful. So when I lost all of that, I really struggled with, you know, how am I going, you know, how will the world see me now? And that transition of going from being in control of, you know, how I look or how I'm presented to the world to now the wheelchair overtaking my identity. Because instead of being Pranita or Miss Farrar on the job or this person, I'm, you know, often referred to as the girl in the wheelchair. And so I felt invisible. People didn't see me. And so, you know, it was hard for me to even see myself. When I look in the mirror, I see the same girl. Internally, I still have the same mind as that girl prior to. But physically, I had to realize, how do I get these people to know that I'm more than the girl in the wheelchair? And I had to do that by projecting it from what I saw for myself. And so, you know, I don't say it as you know, a thing of vanity. And, Deborah, you and I had talked about, you know, all of us have that thing. Or it might not be necessarily, even if it's not the thing that you still makes you beautiful, but maybe it's the thing that you still makes you unattractive. You know, everybody has one of those. You know, if my butt wasn't so big, if my eyes were a little bit bluer, or whatever it is, we all have that thing that stops us from being who we are. And I use, you know, paralysis, because by definition is the loss of the ability to move and sometimes to feel. So we all have that thing that stops us from moving forward in life. We're not pretty enough to be in front of the camera, or we're not good enough to, you know, be loved. So, although mine is, you know, a wheelchair and stems from lupus, but we all have some type of thing that's paralyzing us from moving forward or feeling. But if we can see the beauty that, you know, find that thing that we love about ourselves, then that's what people are going to see. Because when I was walking around, you know, not walking around, but when I was, you know, just hating myself, I didn't know it, but I was projecting that. And so now that I've embraced, I am who I am, and I know who I am. So, I mean, yeah, it's my job to teach you how to, you know, treat me by the way I, you know, represent myself. And so that's kind of how Pretty and Paralyzed, and, you know, often, you know, the world does not associate beauty when it comes to disability. So it's just something that makes people think, like, those two can coexist in one, you know, in one statement. And so it's just, you know, something to get the mind dispelling some of those myths that just because a person is disabled or paralyzed, that there has to be some, you know, negative or ugly connotation with it. And, you know, I think about it in many ways. My life is very blessed, and I've had people even tell me, you know, girl, you're living better than some of us. Oh, I even had people say, I would trade your life in a day, although I don't think they know what they're talking about. But I don't have the problems of the world, so I'm at peace, and, you know, and I'm able to give back. And so that's what I want to do with my blog. And you can access it, the website, prettyandparalyzed.com or Pretty and Paralyzed on Facebook. And my book, I'm projecting that it will be finished in the next 6 months. Right now the working title is Lupus Interrupted, Love Interceded. Again, as Deborah said, that might change, but if you continue the journey with me, I will definitely keep you posted.
I love what you said about all of us have something that we allow to immobilize us, keeps us from moving forward, and that also because as you were walking around, and I know you said walking around, and I know that it was so funny because I was like, yeah, walking around. She was walking around because I knew what you said. So you're moving through life, whatever we are thinking about ourselves, we are throwing it out into the universe, and people are responding to that because our thoughts are things, and our thoughts are energy, and then we think it's the people out there. But it's really our thoughts telling the people what to think about us.
Mm-hmm.
And so it doesn't really matter what it is. So, yeah, absolutely. I love that description of paralyzed and how you just elaborate on that, because it doesn't matter whether it's physical. And I know that you and I talk, and the reason why I wanted you to come on the show, one other reason, is because I was really appalled that people would say some of the things you said. What were some of the things people would say to you when they would see you in a wheelchair?
Yeah, I mean, I've gotten just the strength of them. Other than the staring, the bold ones, you know, actually walk up to me and say, you know, what's wrong with you? Or you're so beautiful. You're too pretty to be in that wheelchair. Or you look so normal. Or you don't look like you're sick. You know, so again, it's the stereotype of, you know, disability. And, you know, I get it. Sometimes people just, you know, it's not something you see every day. You know, we don't all have a personal connection, you know. But, and I've over the years, I've taken it as a teachable moment where I used to be extremely defensive. But the people will just, you know, be appalled, not even appalled, but be so surprised that I had the audacity to put on makeup and I still wear high heels, even though I'm not technically walking in them. But I'm still a lady. I'm still, you know, I still like the same things that every other, you know, most women does. I like, you know, nice. I like to dress nice. I like to get my hair and nails done as well. But, you know, people think when you have a disability that you have to forfeit all areas of normalcy, and that's just not true.
Yeah, and maybe it's some belief that people had that you just succumb, like,
yeah,
oh, life is over now, and I'll just come out the house with a rag on my head, and I don't need to do these pretty eyelashes that you talked about when we talked. Like, you know, like, I don't have to, you know, put on lipstick, and you have really beautiful skin, so I'm like, and you got a beautiful face, so it's like, why wouldn't you do what every other woman does? You know, it does, you know, and so, yeah, I believe you're here. You stayed around so that you can enlighten people when you show up. And here's what's coming to me very powerfully, and it's like, it's not me, it's God. If you've shown up in a wheelchair and you look like everybody that people expect to be in a wheelchair, whatever that looks like, then you would not stand out.
Right.
And therefore you would not be noticed, and therefore you wouldn't be paid attention to, and therefore you couldn't have the message that you have. Your message, as soon as you show up, you are giving your message. Oh, I love it. It's like you just showing up. And like I said, I'm telling everybody, I'm trying to get her to call her book Pretty and Paralyzed. You know, to me, that's precisely what you do. You show up pretty and paralyzed, and people come up to you. They're not going up to the woman, even, or the man in the wheelchair that they think belongs in the wheelchair. So, oh, you, that's what people in the wheelchair look like. They're not going up to them. Man, what are you doing in this wheelchair? So you are here. You're like, you got this message that's built in your beauty. Your beauty is a part of your message. God, you're so wonderful. You know how to do this thing. So I'm going to play some music. And I want you, my listening audience, if you have a question for Pranita, please press 1. And I want you to get your question answered, okay? So when I come back, you should have your questions ready.
This is not a time to get distracted. This is not a time to go off course. This is not a time to lose your focus. Got a word for you for the Lord. And you cannot afford to lose your way. You come too far from where you started. So please don't let the time you stole be wasted on things that you'll later regret. Wishing you inside of this test. It's everything you've ever dreamed, everything you prayed for, everything he promised you that you'd get. Waiting on the other side of temptation, waiting on the other side.
I dedicate that song to you, Pranita Farah.
I loved it. It was wonderful.
Yes, I thought about you. Kevin LeVar, that's his name, called Destiny. You have one. I have one. We all have one. Prince, he had one. He fulfilled his. He has gone on to another adventure. And so all of you who are listening, you have a destiny. And if Pranita can triumph and be here with us this evening, having found new reasons for being here, to shine her light and to share her story and to be that light, then we can do it. You can do it. And so we have a caller.
Yay!
And if you have a question, or even a comment, you just want to wish Pranita well, and you have a comment, then press 1. And our caller, 443. Uh-oh. Where did he go? Where did the call go? Okay. Okay, let's try this again. 443-418. Doing some tricks here. Okay, I'm going to try it again because technology will do what it wants to do sometimes. 418, welcome to She Stretch Radio.
Well, thank you.
Yes.
Did you hear
me? Question or comment?
Oh.
Yes. And
oh, hello, DeBoris. This is Dolphin.
Hello.
Hey, you are absolutely, yes. Oh, you are absolutely wonderful. You're beautiful. I love you. I love this show. I didn't think I would like this show, but your guest, Pranita, has really enchanted me. Wow. That sister is. Wow. And I have a couple of questions for her.
Okay.
So, the first question is she completely... Miss Pranita, are you completely healed of lupus, and is there any chance of a relapse?
Well, the thing is, you very rarely, if ever, will find a doctor that will say a person is healed of lupus or in remission of lupus. It's always lying dormant. The only thing we can try to do is, you know, keep the fire down. So I still have lupus, but I've been pretty healthy. I have a new team of doctors. I've changed a lot of things about my lifestyle, so I've been able to stay out of the fire zone. But I still have, you know, the remnants of, you know, the damage that was already done, as well as, you know, I have to stay away from certain things that will typically flare up my lupus again. But most of my doctors have me, as long as I, you know, maintain some of the things that I've been doing, that, you know, hopefully if it ever got to at a severe level again, we know enough now that we can stop it from, you know, having any more major effects.
Well, and my second question, is this a disease that strikes only women, or are there cases of men coming down with lupus?
Well, 80% of the people diagnosed are women of childbearing age. Men do have lupus, but at a much, much more narrower rate than that. So mostly 80+% are women of childbearing age who are diagnosed with lupus. But it can happen. My brother actually has lupus. We think that it's a genetic situation that may have been passed down in our family, because it's very rare for siblings to have lupus. But so, yeah, it can happen for men, but not as likely.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Dolphins. Thank you for listening. Thank you for your questions.
Okay.
And so
that was cool.
My question, yeah, he said he didn't think he would like the show, and you have enchanted him. I love it. So here's my question. Does it strike women of color more?
Yes, very disproportionately. African-American women are the majority. And I don't mean a 51 to 49. I mean more like a 70 to 80 to 30%.
Wow. Wow. Okay, we have another question.
Great.
917-445. Welcome to She Stress Radio.
Good morning, beautiful Deborah. Thank you so much. This is Jackie from La Plata.
Hi, Jackie. How are you?
Hi.
I'm doing wonderfully well. I want to make sure I'm saying your name correctly. Is it Bernita with a B?
With a P. It's Bernita. Close.
Oh, I'm sorry. I wasn't for sure. I apologize. I want to thank you for your conversation this evening. I can truly, truly admire to a lot of things that you have said, because in '93, I was in a car accident and I was on my back and I didn't want no one else to be involved in my life. You know, being on my back and not able to walk. You know, got to be in the wheelchair, being dependent and not independent. You know,
right.
I was young at that time. I was like 27, you know, and I can identify what you're saying about being in the nursing home. You know, I don't want to be here with these old smelly folks. This is not my life, you know. What do I have to look forward to? And then your friends, they all of a sudden seem to drop off. By yourself, you know, they say they're going to come, they say they're going to call you, and they don't show up, they don't call you, life is going on, you know, and here you is, here I am, you know, can't even walk, can't even go to the bathroom by myself, being dependent on someone else. What kind of life is this for a young person?
That's the worst of it.
Yeah.
Being dependent, that is the worst of it.
Right, right. And so then we have to learn a new way of life, you know, and then being labeled. I couldn't stand being labeled. Oh, she's that lady over there in the wheelchair. Oh, she's disabled. No, I'm not disabled. I couldn't stand it. I couldn't stand being called disabled. You know, I just have to do something different. You know, going from being independent, then got to be dependent on someone else, and then your pride and everything kick in. So I applaud you and where you at and what you are doing, you know, because you keep your life generating, especially within inside of yourself, because, you know, you blogging, you know, that helps. I know it helps to keep you motivated because you feel like, you know, there's a purpose for you and your life. You know, even though we have to do things differently, we still do have a purpose in life. And sometimes it takes God putting us on our back. Oh, okay, I got the message now.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. That's exactly what it is sometimes. Absolutely. And then we also, you know, there's a certain line the board mentioned, I'm sure you heard when she said, you know, some people, and I've gotten this a lot of people said, I don't see how you do it. I would have just given up, or I would have just, you know, pulled the plug or whatever. And so the difference is, at a certain point, we have a decision to make. We
right.
have to, you know, mm-hmm. we have to decide which way we're going to land. And, you know, sometimes, mm-hmm. you know, my goal was, well, if I can't walk, I don't want anything. It was all or nothing.
Right.
And so I was making
right.
all these deals with God and with doctors.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, if I'm not healed, I, you know, and so even now, I, you know, I was, when I, you know, when God would just kind of create these opportunities for me to share my testimony, I still felt, even though I knew it was Him nudging me, and I knew I was grateful for the testimony, but I still felt like I didn't want to stand in front of all these people or be in front of all these people at this church or wherever and, you know, and have all of them, you know, looking at me, like you said, being labeled
right.
and looking at me. And then after so many years, and once I started speaking, I realized there's a lot of people out there wanting to, you know,
right.
that we all have a story. And so
yeah.
when I started, you know, taking it serious, I'm like, okay, God, I tried everything else. I tried to, you know, go back to corporate. I applied to law school, trying to go back to my idea of, you know, trying to grab that old life and that old, you know, idea of normalcy or success. And then, you know, someone said to me, why are you out here trying to do what everybody else does? You know, you're not, you know, you have a job. God gave you a job.
Mm-hmm.
You're not a, you can't, after this testimony, you can't go back and take the metro to a government job. Like, that's not, you know, God has called you to do something else. And I said, well, you know, I told God, well, once I'm back on my feet and walking, then I can, I'm like,
mm-hmm.
God, then I can tell the story, and they'll really believe
right.
me because they'll see that I'm walking. And then I realized that if I was walking, I wouldn't necessarily capture the audience. So this is why He has me here. Now, granted, I believe He can and will, he has the capability of a complete restoration. Sometimes God can do things as a quick work. So I have not, quote, accepted that this is the final stage, but I do know that in this season, that the reason that I'm still in the wheelchair is because that's how He's using me to get on the platform so that I can reach the people. Because if I was just walking and I'm telling people the story, it's like, yeah, we heard it all before.
Right.
You know, but I'm showing. I'm showing up and I'm showing them. And so that kind of gives me and, you know, credence to the fact that I'm still in the wheelchair, but, yes, I'm still I'm happy and I'm still giving God the credit. Although, no, He hasn't healed me yet, but it's my faith that's keeping me going and believing that He can. And even if He doesn't, He's given me enough, you know, just the fact that I'm here, I'm out of the hospital, I'm out of the nursing home, I'm married, I own my own home, I have a great job, I drive a car. So I have all the things that I once thought were out of my league, you know, as a, quote, disabled person. So He's given me glimpses of, you know, the sky is the limit. And so I'm
mm-hmm.
grateful for that, and I hope, you know, for you as well, that it sounds like, you know, you we do share a lot of the same sentiments and,
mm-hmm.
you know, how things change when it comes to image. But like I said, you know, when I talk about love interceded, when Luke is interrupted, and I'm not just talking about, you know, romantic love with my husband, I mean God's love, you know, the love I had
mm-hmm.
to learn for myself. Most of us have a problem looking in the mirror and giving ourselves a compliment. Why is that?
Yeah.
Why, you know, so eventually, you know, once we start to love ourselves, you know, we do radiate that to the world. So a lot of times people say, oh, I would have given up, or, you know, I made a conscious decision, and sometimes accountability, and not just people in the wheelchair, that's most of us in general. We lack accountability
mm-hmm.
for ourselves. And so I'm hoping and I pray that, you know, your struggles or your challenges, you know, with being having those physical challenges, that you also have found peace in, you know, doing things differently and, you know, just loving yourself and letting people, you know, follow behind.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Well, thank you.
And that is where
thank
I'm at
you.
Now. Oh, I'm sorry.
Mm-hmm.
No, I was just saying thank you, Jackie. Thank you for your comments, and I didn't know that about you. I didn't know you had that experience. So you just don't know everybody's story.
Mm-hmm.
And what I heard you saying, Pranita, is about you saying you still believing that God will heal you. And what came to mind there is how we define healed and success. And
mm-hmm.
that sometimes we, and I can use the term success, and sometimes we just leave it all the way. We have this definition of being healed or successful that
mm-hmm.
may keep us from ever embracing that, because I totally understand what you're saying, but, you know, you're so much sounder or saner, I should say, and your life, as you just described it, is better than a whole bunch of people's lives. And doesn't mean you
mm-hmm.
you have to give up hope that God will heal you. But to me, the word healed in this context doesn't, unhealed doesn't describe you. So the opposite of healed, I guess, would be unhealed.
Right.
But you sound so healed. You see what I'm saying? So maybe you know, I would just give you that. Maybe you still believe, you're believing that God will allow you to walk, but you are
right.
healed
yeah.
from what I hear. You see?
Yes, I like that. I like that. But yes, that is absolutely correct. That's the truth.
Mm-hmm. So you are wonderful, and thank you, Jackie. And so let's begin to wrap it up, because there's so much that you brought to the show. You really just blessed us this evening. I know you talked about, as we have a few more minutes, but talk a little bit about what it's like. You said, because it's like this triple kind of, what did you call it when we talked earlier?
Minority.
Yeah, triple minority. And we also talked about walking and how a woman's walk. So not to go too deep, but I thought it's important that for people who see people in a wheelchair, I just want people to be more mindful of how you treat people that appear to have handicaps or disabilities. And those are words to me that describe all of us, that some of the disabilities you can't see.
Yeah. That's absolutely true. Well, I mean, we briefly had talked earlier about just, you know, and I mentioned, you know, instead of just having to deal with being a woman in a man's corporate world, on top of that, you know, being a minority or a black woman, you know, you add that onto it. And then when you add, you know, feminism, racism, and now I'm adding what's called it's ableism. So I don't know if you've ever heard that term, but it's used in the disability community. You know, just kind of the stereotypes, and then also that leads to discrimination. And, you know, I face that, you know, a bit. But I just, you know, we talked earlier about the perception. You know, I said that it's not walking as a – what makes us human in species is that we walk on two feet. Most other – species, they are on four legs. So it's unnatural not to be walking as a human. So when other people or society sees that, it, you know, it triggers the feeling of unnaturalism. And so, you know, when you think about a woman and her walk and her gait, you know, men in society, you can judge, or it contributes to a woman's beauty, her walk. You know, we hear the songs, we hear the, you know, the comments, oh, her walk was so sexy, or her walk was, you know, watch those hips move side to side. And that's kind of, you know, a big identifier for a woman's beauty. And so, you know, I talked about losing those things or not being able to, you know, have those things as part of my identifying or beauty identifiers. You know, again, it's turning around what society has defined as beauty, and not necessarily debunking those things, because I'm sure, you know, it still is beautiful, but necessarily, you know, helping people to see beyond that. You know, I'm constantly always convincing somebody I'm more than the wheelchair. And so that's just one of the things that I'm hoping that my message will allow people to kind of relax on the wheelchair and allow a person's personality and character to come through.
That's, well, you definitely are doing that now. And what would you say to people as we wrap up? What would you leave with people? Because the people who are listening, they know people as well. And so what message do you have to people as to how to treat a person who's in the wheelchair? You see a woman, because you had some really ignorant comments from people. What would you say to people? Because you're helping people to move, like you said, beyond and to embrace that you can be both pretty and paralyzed.
Mm-hmm.
But what would you wish people would know, wouldn't say, or that sort of thing?
To leave the judgment, you know, after, you know, we all say it's not good to judge, but, you know, we all do it. But, you know, to just leave the judgment out of the equation and treat a person in a wheelchair, I mean, it's a mobility device. It has nothing to do with their heart, their spirit, their soul, their intelligence. It's a mobility device. So allow that person to be everything that they are, and, you know, how they get around is just a small facet of, you know, of their life. It's not who they are. So just like the lady who called in, I think her name is Jackie, you know, she related to the woman in the wheelchair. So we lose all identity, and it's all wrapped up in the woman in the wheelchair. So just that level of respect and courtesy, and you'll find that, you know, we'll probably, because of the level of insight after, you know, having to adapt to being different, or in my case, losing everything and recreating yourself, you know, we have a certain level of appreciation and joy for life, so you'll probably, you know, make a friend or have the best employee compared to, you know, a person who's not had to, you know, lose everything and be great, you know, have a certain level of gratitude and joy for, you know, small things like just waking up and being out of the hospital on any given day. So, you know, just kind of allow that person to come through from the inside before you make any final judgments on who or what they're capable of.
Yeah, yeah, which that explains to me why sometimes people, when you want to help someone in a wheelchair or that appears to be disabled, sometimes they resist it. They don't want it because they feel judged. They feel like you're saying, I can't do this. And so I thank you for this evening. And Pranita Farah, we have been talking with Pranita Farah, and you should see the show on my Facebook page in case you want the spelling of her name and all of that. And her blog is prettyandparalyzed.com. Is that with the symbol or the and, word and?
It's when you type it in the URL, it's and, but the logo is the ampersand symbol.
Okay. All right, and so
and also
thank
on Facebook,
you.
Pretty and Paralyzed is on Facebook.
And she's on Facebook. And so I thank you, Pranita Farah, for being on She Stress Radio. I'm your host, Deborah M. Ricks. I thank all of you.
On the outside, I am not my age, I am not started.